still in Perek Gimel of Mishlei, and sometimes I bedafka want to call your attention to very familiar psukim that have made it into the davening and the like, and now you'll see the context in which these verses appear. And if you look in Perek Gimel, last week we looked at the verse, which is not in davening, but it's a famous verse anyway. Yikara hi mipninim v'chol chafatzecha lo yishvuva. The Torah is more precious than either rubies or pearls, however you translate pninim. And anything you have in the world cannot be worth even a single word of the Torah. And if you recall, I ended with the Gemara's drasha that the word pninim could be read as panayu pnim, the innermost, meaning the kodesh hakodashim. And Chazal learned from here that even a mamzer, that is a talmid chacham, is greater than the kohen gadol who enters the holy of holies. No matter what, yikarahi, the Torah is more precious than even lifnai v'lifnim. Now, the next three verses are verses that do appear in the davening in various places. Verse 16, Tesayin, Perek Gimel, Tesayin, Orach yamim bimina, bismillah osher v'chavod. Now, this does appear, but it's in the small print. So a lot of people, you may not happen to say this, but some say this when the Torah is lifted up. So everyone says, V'zos HaTorah, this is the Torah. But then there's a little small print that a lot of people skip. And in the small print, this is one of the verses that is recited. And it says, long life is in her right hand, and in her is the Torah, in her left hand is Osher V'Kavod, wealth and honor. And the question becomes, what is the meaning of right and left? I mean, it's not going to be a question of the right side of the Torah and the left side of the Torah. I mean, that wouldn't have any particular significance. So the Gemara in Maseches Sukkah has an interpretation here that's very important, but the interpretation itself is ambiguous. The right means ma'minim ba. Not with an aleph. Ma'mimin is who make it the right. Meaning those who make the Torah to the right, and again, that's not a self-evident a phrase, those who make the Torah to the right get orech yamim, and those who make the Torah to the left get osher v'kavod. Now that's what the Gemara darshins. Ma'minim ba and masmilim ba. The question still becomes, okay, what does it mean, ma'minim ba? Again, don't confuse it. It sounds like the word emuna. That's not what it is. It's mem, yud, yud, mem, nun, yud, final mem. Ma'minim mean they place it to the right. So here, the idea is, with apologies to lefties, generally speaking, in biblical imagery, as is normally true in common speech as well, the right hand is considered to be the stronger hand, the dominant hand. In fact, the truth of the matter is, maybe I don't have to apologize to lefties, because the way Chazal speak about it is, if you're a lefty, that simply means your left hand is your right hand, meaning we just switch it around. Meaning, by definition, the right hand is the stronger hand. If you're a lefty, so that becomes your right hand, so to speak. Now, therefore, the notion of those who put the Torah to their right, meaning they consider the Torah the single most important thing in their lives. And that means they learn Torah not for ulterior motives, not to get honor, not to get glory. They learn Torah lishma. That's what it means, ma'minim ba. The Torah itself is the ikar. So for people who learn Torah lishma, the gift that God gives them is not osher v'kavod, it is not wealth and glory, because that is not why they were learning the Torah. They were learning the Torah to become close to Hashem. They were learning the Torah because they wanted to know God's will. Osher v'kavod is not what they seek, and therefore it is often not what they'll get. But what they will get is Arichus Yamim. Now, that itself needs a little explanation. Normally, Arichus Yamim means a long life. And indeed, it is the case that we have Talmidei Chachamim, who are sometimes given the gift of a very long life, or Rav Yashiv Zatzal, Rav Adi Yosef, Rav Scheinberg, etc. On the other hand, it's also true that there's not a guarantee of that either, that there are great Talmidei Chachamim, and even people who are not Talmidei Chachamim, maybe they died even young, but they were learning Torah Lishma, and they did not have Arichus Yamim. So here, there are two explanations. One explanation is that Arichus Yamim can also mean Olam Haba, which is called the Yom Shekulo Oruch, the eternal day. It does not always refer, and even by Kibbut Aviyim, where the Torah says, L'man Yarichun Yamecha. Do you remember the story of Elisha ben Avoya, who became a heretic? He stopped believing in the Torah, because he once saw a child who, at his father's behest, climbed a tree to shoo away the mother bird and take the eggs. And the child fell off the tree and the child died. And Elisha ben Avoya said, how could this be? There are only two mitzvahs in the Torah where the Torah says explicitly, if you keep the mitzvahs, you have Arichus Yamim, you have long life. One is Kibbut Aviyim, honoring parents, and the other is sending away the mother bird. And here is a boy that was keeping both of those commandments, and he dies. The Torah, he concluded, was a fraud, it wasn't true, it was made up. Chas v'shalom. But Chazal say, you know, things don't always work in a literal way. Arichus Yamim can sometimes refer to Olam Haba and the like. Same here. Sometimes the Arichus Yamim will be in this world. Sometimes the Arichus Yamim will be in the world to come. So that's one answer. But let me give you another answer. You know, the Sfas Emes was the second Ger Rebbe. His grandfather, called Chidushei Harim, Rav Yitzchak Meir Alter, was the founder, so he was a Talmud of the Kutzker Rebbe, but he was a founder of the dynasty that became Ger, Hasidus of Gor, or Ger, and Ger was the largest Hasidus in Poland. It certainly was, a very, very huge Hasidus. Now, Baruch Hashem, it's also large, but in Poland, I mean, you had like a million Ger Hasidim. And the Chidushei Harim himself had 10 sons, and all of his sons died in his lifetime. But the Sfas Emes was the youngest, was the grandson of his last son who died. And the Sfas Emes lost his father when he was only 7 or 8 years old, and the Chidushei Harim raised the grandson. And the Sfas Emes eventually became a great, great Hasidic Rebbe, one of the most profound thinkers, a great, great tzaddik. And the Sfas Emes himself died in his early 50s. He died a relatively young man. And his son who succeeded him, the Imre Emes, or Avraham Mordechai, who after the Holocaust came to Eretz Yisrael, gave a hespit that because our father was such a tzaddik, he was zocha to Arichus Yamim. He was zocha to long life. So his own brothers asked him, how can you be maspid our father, that our father was meriting a long life? Our father died in his 50s. So he said, there is a chiluk between Arichus Shanim and Arichus Yamim. Arichus Shanim means many years. And the Imre Emes said, it is possible that a person has many, many years, but his individual days are very short, meaning there's very little that they accomplish in a day. That in a 24-hour day, maybe they accomplish 1 hour of accomplishment, or less. But Arichus Yamim is a bracha, that your day is long. It's as if you have 36 hours in the day, that your day is filled with accomplishment, with goodness, with mitzvot, with chesed. Our father did not merit many years. But Arichus Yamim literally means length of days. It doesn't mean many days. It means the days were long. They were filled with accomplishment, as opposed to a person who in 24 hours might only do 5 minutes of accomplishment. This was 24 hours of accomplishment. So the same thing here. When a person learns Torah Lishma, then Hashem will make him, so to speak, use his day to its fullest. He will use every minute in a positive and constructive way. And that is a great, great bracha. Because Hashem will give the person what he wants the most. What he wants the most is to learn and understand the Torah. Hashem will give it to him by making him the ability to concentrate, to be productive, to be able to learn, even if he's not zocha to a long life. Now why righteous people are taken early, we don't always know. Sometimes it's a kapara for the generation. Sometimes it's to give him more reward in Olam Haba. But his days are going to be filled with accomplishment. Yeah.
Just curious, more reward in Olam Haba. What does that mean, one? And length of days in Olam Haba. Isn't Olam Haba without any days?
No, so that's why it's called length of days. That's exactly, length of days meaning eternity. Eternity.
And so anybody
who
goes to Olam Haba does have the same effect?
Well, Olam Haba is, you know, everyone goes, I mean, almost everybody goes to Olam Haba, but obviously not everybody gets the same. Now, it's not a question, some people get longer Olam Haba, some get shorter. That's not true. Olam Haba is eternal no matter who gets it. But Olam Haba is essentially the sense of connectiveness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the connection of your soul to God. And that has infinite levels of intensity and strength and depth. And the righteous person has a stronger connection, and the less righteous person has a weaker connection. But here is the problem. The person is aware of the weak. In other words, that's the problem. In other words, if I had a weak connection to God, but I wasn't aware there was anything better, then I'd have no particular problem. You know, I'm getting something good. But each one is aware of all of the levels they could have had that they did not have. So there's a bit of a frustration in that, even in Olam Haba. You know, they say, Rav Chaim Kanevsky, should live and be well, asked his father, the Stipler. The Stipler, again, people have forgotten the Stipler, at least, though. The Stipler was a tremendous, tremendous, great gadol. Interestingly, I just say a little story. The Stipler, was very hard of hearing. He was almost deaf. He could hear if you'd scream. He lost his hearing because he was once drafted in the Russian army around World War I, and he didn't want to wear a hat over his ears because he thought might be shotness, a wool and linen mixture. So he had a whole guard duty Friday night, or it was on the trail. There are two stories. One was a shotness story. The other is the soldier left a special hat and coat on a tree branch. And he was supposed to take it off the branch, and on Shabbos you're not supposed to take things off a tree branch. And even though he felt it might be a sakana for him not to wear this clothing, but he said, well, I could wait another minute, and for a minute it won't be a sakana. And he kept on saying, oh, another minute, another minute, another minute, another minute. So he spent the whole night in the freezing Russian winter without covering his ears, without covering his head, without even wearing a coat. And apparently it permanently damaged his hearing. So because of this, it was very scary to see the Stipler sometimes, because since he didn't hear, he spoke very, very loudly. You had the impression, if you saw him, that he was screaming at you. And I remember it was very disconcerting. I was zocheh to meet the Stipler like in the late 70s or early 1980s. And you had to write down what you wanted to say, because, you know, you couldn't really talk to him. So I walk into the room, it was like 12 o'clock at night, and he's sitting at his desk with, you know, piled up with svarim and piled up with kvitlach, all sorts of written requests. And, you know, he's drowsing off, he's taking a little, like, 2-minute nap, and, you know, I'm waiting. All of a sudden he wakes up, and he starts screaming. I was terrified. He starts screaming. He says, why do people, you know, like, why do people give me these things? Why don't they pray to Hashem? Why do they bother me? I'm an old man. I'm going to die soon. Says, I want to learn Torah. Let them go to Hashem. And I'm nodding, you know, as I give him my kvitlach, you know, the same thing. But okay. So, but you know, he really wasn't yelling. That's the, you have to keep the context. He was making a comment, but you know, but the way it sounded, it was like screaming. But the story goes that he, just like Rav Chaim himself does, went out of his way to be a sandik at a bris milah. Went to be a sandik. You know, no matter where he would go in Eretz Yisrael, he would go to any city in Eretz Yisrael to be a sandik. For Rav Chaim Kanevsky? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, now Rav Yashiv was not a traveler. Rav Yashiv did it in Yerushalayim. Right. It's a big zechus. But Rav Chaim, not anymore. Rav Chaim's getting old himself, but Rav Chaim would travel. He wouldn't go to Akko or Eilat because there was some halachic question whether that's Eretz Yisrael. So he didn't want to leave Eretz Yisrael, even in a doubtful, but he would go, you know, to any place that was within the halachic boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Chaim asked his father the following question. It is brought down that by a sandik you try to spread the riches. You don't use the same sandik twice, although for great rabbis we allow it. And the reason is because being a sandik is a segula for becoming wealthy. And you try to spread the wealth, give as many people a chance as possible to become wealthy. So Rav Chaim Kanevsky asked his father, he says, you have been a sandik, you know, 5,000 times. How come you're not wealthy? Even one time is supposed to make you wealthy. How come? So the Stifler said, wealth does not mean money. Wealth means somech b'chelko, you're happy with your lot, and wealth is Hashem will give you your deepest wish. Your deepest wish is the wealth Hashem will give you. And he says, my deepest wish was to learn Torah and to be able to write Svarim that people would learn from. And he says, Hashem gave me my wish. Hashem gave me that wish. As you know, the Stifler himself wrote Svarim on all of Shas, all of the Talmud. And these are Svarim that are among the most popular in all the yeshivas in the world. The Kehilos Yaakov. Everybody learns the Kehilos Yaakov. So he says, that's the meaning of wealth. So the same thing here. Going back to the verse. The Yamina, if you make the Torah your right-hand side, the strongest, dominant aspect, Hashem will not give you, necessarily, wealth and honor. But He will give you what you want the most, and that is more opportunity to learn Torah. Whether that'll be manifest by many years, or whether Hashem will give you the bracha of being productive in your learning, that is what you get. Now, Bismola, it are also people who learn Torah and support Torah, but they relegate Torah to the weaker, meaning to say, the way the Gemara is explained, they learn Torah sholo lishma. They learn Torah. But they learn Torah in order to get honor, in order to get glory. Now that's good as well. This is an important teaching to say. You know, you might say, oh, you learn Torah for ulterior motives, it's worthless. Not at all. Chazal say, a person should learn Torah and do mitzvos, even if it's not for the sake of serving Hashem. Because from the learning that you do not lishma, you will come lishma. That's why we have motivators, right? That's why we give prizes, right? Even for people in Kolo. We give prizes like, you know, some people say, oh, what are you giving prizes? Competition, you're trying to give people kavod? But it's a motivator. It is a motivator. Now, there is one exception to that, though. Tosfos makes a very important distinction between people who learn for glory, which is not great, but that is okay in the sense that that will bring you to Lishma, and people who learn in order to discredit and embarrass others. When you learn to put other people down, that is called Lekanter. Then, your learning is a sin. It is not meritorious at all. It is an avera. And there's even a phrase in the Gemara that people who learn Torah lekanter, it would have been better if they would have, it's a very, very strong expression, they would have been strangled in the placenta when they were born. Meaning to say, such a person, it would have been better, I'm just quoting, I'm not editorializing, it would have been better had he not been born at all. That's a separate type of shalolishma. But the routine shalom lishma, that I want, you know, my parents to be proud of me, or I want to get a shir in a yeshiva, or I want to be a magid shir, I want people to think of me as a chashuv person, that's called regular shalom lishma. And on that we say, mitoch shalom lishma, yavo lishma. And that, however, is called putting Torah to your left side. And for that, you'll get Osher V'Kavod. You are learning for Osher V'Kavod. Hashem gives you the Osher V'Kavod. It'll happen. It'll happen. Right? So that's the meaning of putting Torah to your right. That is Lishma. Versus putting Torah to your left, which is Shalom Lishma, but not Lakantar. You're not doing it to embarrass or put other people down. Yeah.
Or people who are keeping some mitzvahs because they don't steal, because you're not allowed to steal in the greater world,
right,
as well, etc. So that's also another category.
That's an interesting question. Some say the following. You're making a good point. What is the phrase of the Gemara? Le'olam yilmod adam Torah shelo lishma. A person should learn the Torah even if it's not for the sake of heaven. Shemitoch shelo lishma. By doing it not lishma, yavo lishma, you will come to lishma. So some commentaries actually learn that that has to be part of your conscious process. Meaning, I know I'm learning it not lishma, but I'm doing it with the hope that I will eventually be lishma. Which means, if a person truly learns Torah with no connection to want to be lishma, just as an academic pursuit or whatever, perhaps that doesn't count. On the other hand, some learn even that would be good. There's a Talmud Yerushalmi in which Hashem says, even if the Jewish people reject me, Hashem says, if they learn my Torah, the light of the Torah will bring them back to me. So that says a little bit the opposite of what you're saying. So what you're saying is a point that is discussed. Okay, now the next two verses are recited every time we put back the Sefer Torah. But interestingly enough, they are recited in reverse order, right? When we put back the Torah, Shabbos in the morning, Shabbos afternoon, Monday, Thursday, every single time the Torah is read. So we say, Eitz Chaim Hi, right? We even have beautiful Megunim for it. Eitz Chaim Hi L'machazikim Bo, it is a tree of life for those who hold on to the Torah. V'tamcheha Meyushar, and those who support it will be fortunate, will be happy. And then we say, Jeracheha Darchei Noam, her ways are ways of pleasantness, V'chol Nisivoseha Shalom, and all of her ways, we'll talk about the difference again, will lead to peace. So this I have not been able to find the reason for. Why in the liturgy do we reverse the order? That's maybe something you can think about, maybe you can come up with an answer. But in Mishlei at least, these two psukim are next to each other, but in the opposite order of how we recite them in the Siddur. Okay, so that's a good question. But let's at least look at what each pasuk means. Let's look at the first pasuk. Jeracheha, her ways, are darchei noam, our ways of pleasantness, v'chol nisivoseha shalom. So once again, as the Vilna Gaon always does, we have two different words for pathways. We have derech, and sometimes we have orech, but here we have nisiv. Derech, you'll recall, the Vilna Gaon says over and over again, is the major highway in which there are many, many travelers. A big street, a wide street in which many people travel. Doesn't have to be a highway. King George would be a derech harabim. But we have different words for individual pathways that people walk through, in which there aren't a lot of people. Sometimes the word that is used is orach, and sometimes it's nesiv. Now here, unfortunately, the Vilna Gaon does not really help us totally. He does not tell us what, you know, we know the difference between derech and the other words, but we don't have a clear distinction between orach and nesiv. He gives really this fundamentally the same definition, that derech is the derech harabim, And the nisiv is the individual pathway that you forge for yourself. And this is what it is saying. Derachaha. The overall derech of Torah. This is the Torah that applies to everybody. We all have the same mitzvos. We all have the same obligations. Right? Your mitzvos, my mitzvos, we keep the same mitzvos. What does that derech lead to? That derech leads to sweetness. Goodness. Noam. Now Noam is not just good in the objective way. You know, something could be good for you, but it could be like castor oil, meaning to say, if they still, I don't know if they still give castor oil, whatever it is. Now there's something that's, you know, you need to take it, but it's very, very bitter. Noam is different. Noam is not just a good thing for you, but also something that is pleasant, something that is sweet. Now, this is a sweetness, however, that sometimes comes with time. Shlomo HaMelech is not suggesting that all the time the mitzvos are going to make me excited, the mitzvos are going to make me happy, the mitzvos are going to be fun. We know that the mitzvos take work. Learning Torah takes much, much work and much effort. There's not always an immediate reward. But ultimately, the Derech HaTorah is one of sweetness, one of pleasantness. Now, many Mefarshim also learn that Noam is not simply the internal sweetness that I feel, but Noam refers to Bein Adam Mechaveiro. That when a person walks in Darchei Noam, that means their interactions with others are interactions of sweetness and pleasantness. Right? So there are two different ways of understanding it. What does it mean to say Darchei Noam? One interpretation is that internally, following Hashem's law will be sweet and pleasant and uplifting. The other interpretation is that he who follows Hashem's law will be a person of pleasantness in their interaction with others. Now, this is also something very, very important, because sometimes, superficially, we get the impression that it isn't always so. And Shlomo HaMelech is saying, it's supposed to be so. That's the way it's supposed to be. We have a similar teaching. Talmidei Chachamim marbim shalom bi'olam. Talmidei Chachamim increase peace in the world. A Talmud Chacham is someone that makes shalom. Now, again, I understand that these are more complicated than one might seem, because sometimes the Talmud Chacham has to stand up and reject things, but you do it in a way that doesn't necessarily cause unnecessary humiliation, unnecessary pain. You know, I've told the story before, but again, it's worthy to keep in mind. This is a story about the Chafetz Chaim. That the Chafetz Chaim once had to expel a student in Radin because the boy, it was like a 15, 16-year-old boy, the boy was caught smoking on Shabbos, which, you know, was a pretty, pretty serious thing. Now, the Chafetz Chaim was not the Rosh Yeshiva of Radin. The Chafetz Chaim didn't even have, I mean, he started the yeshiva, but the Chafetz Chaim belonged to Klal Yisrael. He was not involved in the day-to-day. He was not a Rebbe, he was not the Rosh Yeshiva, he was not the Mashgiach, but he was the head. So, the Rebbe that caught him, so to speak, said, you have to go to the Chafetz Chaim. Now imagine how frightening that would be, to go to the Chafetz Chaim. Ay, ay, ay. And not because you were late for davening, but because you were Mechalel Shabbos. So the boy is like shaking and shivering and frightened. And he goes to the Chafetz Chaim. And, you know, the Chafetz Chaim was very short. The Chafetz Chaim was shorter than the 16-year-old boy. And the story, now there are two stories. I'm not sure if it's the same boy or two different stories. Because they tell two different stories about this incident. And I don't know if it's two different stories or not. And that is, story number one is, he went to the Chafetz Chaim, he was there for 5 minutes. He came out, he was a changed person. He became religious, he became a righteous person. And, you know, so the story goes that a rabbi was telling this story in Miami, like 50 or 60 years later, and said, he was talking about motivation, how do you change people? And he told this story, how the Chafetz Chaim, in a 3-minute conversation, changed this person's life. And he said, if I only knew what was said at that conversation, I would have the secret of motivation. I could change the world. So in the back of the audience, an old, bent-over man gets up on a cane. These things never happen to me, but and says, I am the person. And I'll tell you what was said. So now everybody's listening. And he said, the Chafetz Chaim took my hands in his hand, in his hands. And I felt the warmth of his hands. And then tears fell from his bright blue eyes onto my hands. And the tears like burnt a hole in my skin. I felt the heat and the fire of the tears. And he says, I saw in his eyes such an unbelievable love for me that he cared so much that I was taking myself away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when I saw the pain that he had, I could then imagine the pain that God has when a Jew walks away. And I said, I can't do that to the Chafetz Chaim and I can't do it to Hashem. And he says, that changed my life. That sense of the love that the Chafetz Chaim had for me. Now that is one story. Then they tell another story. But again, as I say, I don't know if it's two stories, the same person or not the same person. And that is, as the boy was leaving to go home, because apparently he still got kicked out, the Chafetz Chaim said, where are you going? And the boy said, well, the Rebbe said, I'm out of yeshiva. He says, just because you're out of yeshiva, that doesn't mean I don't care about you. You'll stay in my house. You can't be in yeshiva because you're a bad influence on other people. So you stay with me and I'll learn with you myself. Now, on one level you might say, hey, that sounds like, you know, the guy who breaks the rules benefits. He gets a private seder with the Chafetz Chaim. On the other hand, having a private learning with the Chafetz Chaim is not that easy. You really can't be late. Can't really say Lashon Hara. You can't, you know, whatever it is. It's not as easy as it sounds, so to speak. But this is such a remarkable story because what it says is this, and it's relevant to parenting, it's relevant to a whole bunch of things, that even if somebody has to be kept away from others because they're a bad influence, that doesn't mean that they're nothing. That doesn't mean that they're worthless. That doesn't mean that they don't count. You find a way to help them in a way that doesn't hurt others. This is Darchei Noam. Chafetz Chaim could have, you know, told the guy, you're garbage, you're nothing, you're worthless, get out of here. But Darchei Noam, right? So this is the Torah, Derecha Darchei Noam. The Derech HaTorah is one of pleasantness. You know, Dubner Magid gives a parable that there were two merchants who brought their wares to a fair to sell. One had a whole suitcase full of pots and pans, which were heavy. And the other had a satchel of diamonds that was light. But of course the light burden was worth many, many more times. And when the diamond person hired a porter to carry his thing, the porter took the wrong suitcase. He took the suitcase full of pots and pans. And the story basically goes, if what you're carrying is so heavy and burdensome, that's not my load. My load is precious, but my load is ultimately something that does not create, you know, weight and burdensome. And therefore the Zubner Magid said that if a person's relationship to Torah is one of burdensomeness, heaviness, then one has to reevaluate whether they are keeping the Torah properly, whether the philosophy is correct, whether they have the right teachers, whether they're in the right environment. Because the Derech HaTorah is supposed to be a Darchei Noam. Now Darchei Noam, again, to repeat, does not mean a life without toil and a life without work. That would be a superficial Hollywood Ne'imus. And that's not really Ne'imus. That's just whatever it is, a superficial type of pleasure. But in the long run, there has to be a ne'imas, both internally and in terms of how we relate to each other.
And that's the derech. That's true for everybody. Now, nesi vaisaha is the second idea. That in addition to the klolius, the general avodas Hashem, which is the common denominator we all have, everybody has to develop their own nesiv, their own particular approach to God. And that will bring a person inner peace. Because when a person tries to be too much like somebody else, when a person tries to imitate, when a person wants to fit in blindly, and they squelch their own internal identity, they don't have inner peace. They feel that there's part of them that's being killed, or part of them that's being suffocated. And shalom is that feeling that every part of me that's good has a way of expressing itself, a way of being recognized. And that's why bedafka, the shalom, the inner peace, comes when there's a nesiv, when you carve out your own individual derech. Derech meaning... I think, again, these themes come up a lot over and over again, but this is the importance of the shvadim. You know, people could raise the question, tribes are a big deal in the Torah. Shvatim, tribes. Now, today we don't have such a consciousness of it because we don't really know, unless you're a Kohen or a Levi, we don't know what Shevet we're from. But in the Torah, it is a big deal. Every tribe had its own land, every tribe had its own nasi, its own flag, its own place in the Midbar and in Eretz Yisrael. Now you might ask the question, why are tribes so important? Tribes seem to be a contradiction to the notion of Am Yisrael, Achdus, one nation. I mean, we need another thing to fight about? Hey, I'm Reuben, my tribe is better than you, you're Shimon, whatever it is. Like, why are tribes important at all? Why is it important that I come from this tribe or that tribe? And the short answer is that Hashem is teaching us a very important idea, that each tribe had its own unique way of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Each tribe had its own derech. Now, we don't know exactly. We know that Yisachar was the tribe that was full-time Torah learning. Zevulun economically supported Yisachar. But in ways we don't fully understand, every single Shevet had a unique way of serving Hashem. The common denominator was the Torah and the mitzvos. But here is the thing. The idea is Hashem did not want a single community where everybody is the same. The beauty of Klal Yisrael lies within the diversity and different malchim. Again, I'm referring to those who, of course, accept the Torah and keep the mitzvos. That's why there's Hasidus and Misnagdim and different types of Hasidus, Ashkenazim and Svardim and Musar. All of these different groupings. They can be a source of dissension and machlokas, which is not good. But they can also be a sign of the beauty and diversity of the different pathways of serving Hashem. That's why the Arizal says there were 13 gates to the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Because each Shevet has its own gate, its own way of approaching God. And the 13th gate was, if you didn't know what tribe you were, you went through the 13th gate to cover. And therefore, this is making the point that this also applies to individuals. To find your nesiv. So colloquially, we say find your derech. But if you want to be pedantic and exact, people won't understand what you're saying. Find your nesiv. Derech is what everybody does. Right? Derech is the derech harabit. The nesiv is the mahalech for you. And what is beautiful about that is that gives a person shalom. So shalom here means the inner peace of not squelching. Now this is an issue that, in Or Samech we have many people that are chozer b'tshuva, although we have many students actually who have been through all of their lives. And sometimes, you enter the yeshiva world, and let's say a person, or seminary world for that matter, and a person may have all sorts of talents that were developed in a secular context. They might be a musician, a singer, a poet, even an athlete, whatever it might be. And there may be, you know, pressures, subtle or not subtle, to kind of give up all of those things because they're not within the miskeret of what a frum person does. Now, some things a person has to give up. If a person was doing things that are against halacha, if a person was doing things that are a total violation of tznius, then of course, Hashem says we have to keep the Torah. That's the derech. Your individual preferences are not relevant when there's the derech that everybody has to walk on. But sometimes the idea is that there are many, many ways a person can use their talents in creative ways that are also a way they can serve Hashem and they can glorify Hashem precisely by the individuality of their personality. And a person has to find a way to do that. Otherwise, there's not going to be inner peace. Otherwise, there will always be this sense that I'm destroying part of myself. Again, there are two types of tshuva. There's sometimes a tshuva called amputation, where you just cut off that past. And then there's a tshuva of transformation, where you take that past and you change it. Amputation is sometimes necessary. But like a medical amputation, you only do it when you absolutely have to do it. If there's a way to strengthen the arm, to cure the arm, to reclaim the arm, you don't amputate it. Same thing with our past. And it's relevant to a lot of things. The relationship we have with family that are not religious, all sorts of issues in which one has to know that their past is not simply something they escape from, but it's something that they reclaim and transform and elevate and turn it into the source of their individual strength and their nesiv. So the experiences that people have in life, even if they were experiences that may have been against the Torah, can now be redefined as part of their aliyah. Again, I mean, I'll give you an example. Again, I have probably used this before, but as I say, these points come up over and over again. You know, the great Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, Zichrono Livracha, not the Elder of Slobodka, but his great-grandson, the Rashiva of Mir, who was Nifter a short while ago. So I'm sure everybody knows the great story that he was born in Chicago to a very hush of a family and a very religious family. I mean, there's no question about it. Okay. But the thing is that, yeah, that's correct. But the thing is, he came from a very firm hush of a family. He's not like a person who came. But the story goes, he was in Chicago, went to a co-ed high school, was on the basketball team, was on the debating team, etc. So it was not an ultra-Haredi atmosphere in Chicago at the time. So the tenor of the Hespedim was, this is the message from the Hespedim, is see, even when a person comes from nothing, you know, you see what you can become if you devote yourself to Avodas Hashem, that he came from such a despicable, bad background, and Baruch Hashem, look what he became. But there's another way to look at it as well, and that is the Rosh Yeshiva had many, many kochos. Of course, the unbelievable way that he served Hashem with a debilitating illness for so many, so many years. But one of the Rosh Yeshiva's great kochos was his ability to relate to all sorts of people, people who were not religious, people who came from different types of backgrounds. He understood their struggles. He understood their questions. Now, one would say this. Part of his capacity to understand the mind of an American teenager was because he was an American teenager. He went through that. He experienced that world. And even if it was not the world that he would have considered to be ideal to raise his own children, if that's where Hashem put him, then we have a responsibility not to simply cut it off and make believe it never existed, but to take it as part of our identity and then elevate it and utilize it to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So to some degree, he became what he became not in spite of his history, but because of his history. And that is the idea of taking the past, even what you might regard in retrospect as the unsavory or the less prestigious part of the past, so to speak. And that becomes your foundation. The drug addict who kicks it and becomes a drug counselor will be a better counselor because of his addiction, because of the addiction. Now, does that mean I tell somebody, hey, become a drug addict for 5 years, and then you'll be a fantastic counselor? Of course we don't tell a person to do that, because that's putting a person in physical and, more importantly, spiritual danger. Who knows who'll come out of it? But if Lamaise say he had that experience, you don't just believe, you know, make believe it never happened. But that becomes the key to the success in your Avodas Hashem, right? That is the idea of the nisiv. Yeah. That's right. No, that's right. It's the same idea. Well, darko is a little different. Darko means everybody. Why derech you mean? That's a good kasha. That's a good kasha. Now, the question is a very, very good question. If derech is the derech for everybody, and it's nisiv or orach, that is the individual, then the famous verse that also talks about individuality, train a child, chanoch lenar al pi darko, it should say, chanoch lenar al pi nisivo, or cho. Very excellent question, but I think I'll give you a little bit of an answer. And that is, when you're training a child, you have to give the child the basic information of the derech, Torah and mitzvahs. But even when you teach him the derech, you do it in a way that is attuned to his personality. Meaning, we're not yet talking about individual ways of serving Hashem. He has to learn tzitzis, tefillin, davening, Shabbos, kashrus. So he has to learn the derech. But even though you teach the derech, you teach it in an individual way, right? So that's the idea. Okay, right. So this is therefore this is making two points. This pasuk, that the derech of Torah as a general rule should be conducive to sweetness and pleasantness, both internally and how I relate to others. And the second point is, find your nisiv. Find your individuality. Find your creativity. Hashem gave you gifts. Those gifts are your talents, and those gifts are your history. The history, where the Eibishter put you, and what experiences you went through. There is a reason for it. And those dark moments even can be the key to your success and the key to your understanding. And that will give you inner peace, because when you squelch it and you deny it, you know, let's take an amputated limb. You know, there's something called phantom pain. Phantom pain is very, very traumatic. You cut off something, but it's still there to bother you quite a lot. Unless you somehow deal with it and integrate it. Okay. We then come to the next pasuk, which is a very familiar pasuk. Eitz chayim hi lamachazikim ba. The Torah is a tree of life. Lamachazikim ba, to those who hold on to it. Visamcheha, and those who support it. Mu'ushar, are fortunate, are happy. Ashrei, they are happy. Now, this pasuk, Chazal say, is not so much referring to those who learn Torah. This pasuk is referring to those who support the learning of Torah. Just like Yisachar and Zevulun. Now, Zevulun had to learn also, but Zevulun economically supported Yisachar, and they get half of the reward. Even today, there are contracts drawn up called Yisachar-Zevulun contracts, where a person might say, I will support an Avreich and his family in exchange for half of the reward or whatever. Now, this is machlokes exactly. What does it mean, half of the reward? It's very interesting. Because here's the question. If I'm a Yisachar, I mean, am I going to trade half of my reward in Olam Haba for money? Why would I want to do that? So the Or HaChaim actually says, you never lose. Yisachar gets everything, and Zevulun either gets everything, meaning Hashem just doubles it, or Zevulun gets 50% of Yisachar, but it doesn't come out of Yisachar. So you don't lose by these things. But be it as it may, this pasuk is talking about the great reward of those who support Torah. And it uses two words for the supporter of Torah. Machazikim and Tomchim. What is the difference in Machazikim and Tomchim? Tomchim are those who write checks. They hold up the Torah. They economically support Torah. Machazikim are those who support Torah by emotional support and encouragement. Now, sometimes a person could be both. Right? We have Tomchei Torah, who are Machshiv Torah. On the other hand, we can sometimes have one without the other. The Gemara says that part of the great reward that women have is the encouragement that they give to their husbands and children to go to yeshiva and the like. That is the emotional support. And Rachman al-Islam, you can sometimes have the opposite situation where somebody writes a check but says, get out of the room, you know, stop bothering me, here's your check, get out. You might be a tomech of Torah, but you make the person learning feel like a beggar, feel like he's not doing something worthwhile. So, that's why Chaim is great, right? Now they're similar to the Lishman, the Shalol Lishma. One who is Machzik Torah becomes a tree of life. Now, here's the thing. A tree generates new life. So too it is brought down that those who honor the Torah will merit children who will become great Talmidei Chachamim. In other words, you're a Machzik Torah, you become a tree of life because you'll create fruit of those who learn Torah. One who financially supports Torah, that's still a big mitzvah. Hashem will give them reward. They'll be happy. But they won't necessarily have the bracha of Eitz Chaim because they're not Machshiv the Torah. In fact, the Gemara even says, it's a little bit of a strange observation, that sometimes the sons of great Talmidei, of course we have many, many exceptions, but it says sometimes the sons of great Talmidei Chachamim are not Talmidei Chachamim, and the children of very simple people might become very, very great scholars. Now again, we have many, many exceptions on either side, but part of it is that it may be sometimes, this is the cost of cynicism, the Talmid Chacham, who is familiar with all of the political intrigues that may exist in the Torah world, may convey a tone, even unintentionally, of cynicism and disparagement. And the simple person, who simply doesn't know all of the inside information, only conveys a positive attitude of respect. And as a result, he who respects and honors the Torah will have children that are Talmidei Chachamim and the like. So that's the Eitz Chaim to those who honor the Torah, and those who financially support the Torah will be given many, many blessings. You know, next week we're going to read about the Mishkan. And in the Mishkan, you'll recall we have the Aron HaKodesh, that's in the Holy of Holies. And when the Mishkan was transported, it was two poles were put into the rings of the Aron HaKodesh. And the Aron HaKodesh had to be carried on the shoulders of Leviim. Right? Two Leviim in front, two Leviim in back. They carried the Aron HaKodesh. Although there is a Medrash that says the Aron actually carried them. And I'll talk about that for a moment. So, the Torah says, when the Mishkan is reassembled, and the Aron HaKodesh is put in the Kodesh HaKodashim, the poles of the Mishkan, the poles of the Aron are not allowed to be removed. The poles must remain in the rings even when the Aron HaKodesh is at rest. In fact, it's one of the 613 prohibitions. The poles of the Aron cannot be removed. Lo yasuru mimenu. Why is that so important? So the Chafetz Chaim explains that the Aron HaKodesh represents Torah study. It is the Torah. The poles represent that who supports the Torah, who keeps the Torah afloat. So, those poles that throughout the whole journey of Olam Hazeh were supporting the Torah, even when those who learn Torah come to rest in the Holy of Holies, which is Olam Haba, those supporters who stuck with the Torah learners are going to be with them in Olam Haba. That is the meaning of the Badei Ha'aron. On the other hand, this teaching that Chazal say that you're carrying the Aron, but really the Aron is carrying you, is exactly the mashal here as well. We think we support the learning of Torah, In fact, it is the Torah that we support that is giving us life and giving us blessing. They tell the story about an old couple that were relatively poor, but they continued to support their children who were learning Torah and the like. And somebody said, you know, you're getting old already. Why do you keep on supporting your children? Let them fend for themselves. Again, I'm not paskining Hakol Maisa. I'm just telling you a story. And the parents said, who knows who is supporting whom? Maybe Hashem has given us life and health because we're supporting Torah. And the story goes, you never know if these stories are totally true. I'm not sure, but the story goes that at some point they did stop and they died shortly thereafter, because indeed what they said was correct. The zechus that gave them life was the support of the Torah, and that is what it means when it says the ark carries those who carry it. Aaron, Noseas, Noseh. Finally, let me just end with one final maisa. If you remember, weeks ago in Parshas Vayishlach, we read about Yaakov Avinu struggling with the angel of Esav, who wanted to kill him. And at the end, the only thing the angel of Esav was able to do was smite him on the thigh. And that's why Yaakov was limping, because the sciatic nerve got dislocated. And that is why we are not allowed to eat the sciatic nerve. And that is why the hindquarters of most animals we don't eat, because it's very difficult to remove the gid hanasha. That's why you can't get a good sirloin steak unless you get a special order butcher. There are special orders that will do it, but it's not done commercially for that reason. Now, the question that the Chafetz Chaim raises is, why does this angel only attack Yaakov and does not attack Avram and Yitzchak? And the answer is because Avram represents the Judaism of chesed, loving kindness. And Yitzchak represents the Judaism of prayer. But Yaakov represents the Judaism of Torah learning. And the Yetzer Hara is perfectly willing to let Jews do a lot of chesed without Torah, or even pray without Torah, because eventually there's not going to be intergenerational continuity. So the Yetzer Hara is willing to let Jews do mitzvahs if they're not going to last. But once there's Torah learning, that creates a Judaism that will perpetuate itself across the generations. The angel of Esav wants to destroy that. Now, the angel of Esav was not successful. He tried to kill Yaakov. He tried to destroy the Koach of Torah. But he could not do so because there will always be Jews that will learn Torah, even if they're starving. But he did have a partial victory. The Zohar HaKadosh says that just as the thigh supports the body, the thigh represents those who support Torah learning. Esav was not able to destroy Torah, but he made the financial support of Torah precarious and weak. To mix my anatomical metaphors, the Achilles heel of Klal Yisrael is the dislocated thigh. And therefore the Zohar, the Chafetz Chaim said, it is the curse of Esav, of Esav's angel, that the financial support of Torah will always be vulnerable and precarious. Even if every shtus in the world, you know, whether it's cable TV or Netflix, we're making billions and billions of dollars, the Limud HaTorah is going to be financially challenged. Ad kedei kach, that the Chafetz Chaim said, any Torah institution that does not have financial difficulties, one must question how authentic it is. Because if it's a true Torah institution, it should be suffering. Now, that doesn't mean, oh, I'm not going to support Torah because you're supposed to suffer. That would be similar, to take a woman's example, to the 19th century Christian theologians, all of whom were men, who said that when anesthesia was developed for childbirth, a woman cannot take anesthesia. Of course not. It says in the Torah, you shall give birth in suffering. Our answer is that God is telling me what the natural order is, but we are permitted and commanded to make it better. So the same way that it's natural that labor is painful, but we are supposed to alleviate the pain, it is natural that Torah will be poverty-stricken. but we still have a mitzvah to alleviate that. Okay, so this is the Eitz Chaim Hila Machasigma. Yeah, one last question.
Who did you say said that any Torah institute?
Chavitz Chaim. Okay. Have a good day.
I have two quick announcements. I think actually Rabbi Breidowitz, thank you very much, and he gave me a perfect entry into a commercial. Because I'm very often talking about sponsoring a shiur, and what a fine time to tell you and remind you. We do have the opportunity here at the OU Center to stop this.